both knowing.
All right, Mal, welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 595. It's just me and Jason today, and we're going to be talking about a thing that is very telling if you consider factually what it actually means. We're going to talk about bells. Bells may be among some of the oldest, supposed oldest, I'll just call them musical instruments. Some of them are, some of them aren't. But as we unfold all this information about bells, it's going to culminate in the modern narrative where they want to pin on the Nazis the removal of, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of bells, lots, however many it actually was. And that's not the entire story, but it is the narrative that's shaping up. As an example, for the research, I was looking at Notre Dame because I know there were some bells there, and I think the originals got destroyed. There was one really big one that got left, and I wanted to know what happened after the fire. And what you find now is the search engines, like when I was writing for a news place, a fake news place, it's the same thing. A story is made somewhere and then it just gets replicated as ad nauseum. And so the narrative that they want out in public is just repetitively posted across so many places that it's damn near impossible these days to get good information unless you know what you're doing. But as we jump in, consider what this actually means. In my eyes, the rise of what bells represent and what has happened with them represents the rise of darkness. And you'll see why as we get going. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
Oh, and a hot and going to be stormy afternoon.
Yeah, how soon's that hurricane going to be on you?
Tomorrow night is when they're saying, but we have storms coming in earlier today, too.
Oh, it's terrible. I've gone a good week without sun, and, you know, there's maybe 10 more days, supposedly. Today is the equinox for me as we record this, 9:25. And I really wanted to get a shot at the sun because I suspect the other body, the second sun, separates from behind the sun we see at this time. But anyhow, let's jump in and do what we can do here. The story of bells.
A bell is a percussion instrument that is directly struck to deliver its sound. Most bells will have the shape of a hollow cup that will vibrate when struck in a single dominant tone, with its sides forming a resonator. The strike to the bell surface may be made by an external hammer or mallet or an internal clapper or uvula. In small bells, a loose, sphere-like object might be enclosed within the body of the bell. Think of a jingle bell. Bells are usually cast from what is known as bell metal, which is a type of bronze, done so for its resonant properties. However, it can also be made from other hard materials, depending on the function. Some smaller bells, such as ornamental bells or cowbells, can be made from such things as cast or pressed metal, ceramic, or glass, but large bells, such as church, clock, and tower bells, are normally cast from the previously mentioned bell metal.
So as we get into this, use good logic to consider, I mean, in your mind, when you think about bells, where do you associate them mostly? And I'm talking about the bells that look like bells, like a real bell, like the Liberty Bell. That idea. And actually, that should probably be part of this story. You know, it's cracked. And that somehow is a symbol of good things. It's a damaged bell. That bell don't ring. But anyhow, to get back to the point, as we get through this, consider what the bells were intentionally used for up front, because this becomes a story at the end of Hell's Bells. In other words, the metal that makes the bells makes one sound now. And then after we get through the narrative, the metal that was used in those bells is making an entirely different sound. Just to cue it up. Go ahead, Jason.
Small bells were originally made with what is called the lost wax process. Large bells, however, are cast mouth downwards by filling the airspace in a two-part mold with molten metal. Such a mold has an outer section that is clamped to a base plate on which an inner core has been constructed. Large bells are generally made from approximately 80% copper and 20% tin. This is called bell metal. This has been found to empirically give the most pleasant tone. That being said, the tone of a bell is predominantly because of its shape. A bell is considered to have a good tone when it is in tune with itself. In Western bell founding, this is known as the harmonic tuning of a bell, which results in the bell's strongest harmonics being in harmony with each other as well as the strike note. This will produce the brightest and purest sound, which is obviously desirable. A huge amount of effort has been expended over the centuries in finding the shape which will produce the harmonically tuned bell. The traditional harmonically tuned bell will have a minor third as a main harmonic.
So in my view, the way we think about bells, what we see of bells, what they sound like today is vastly different from what they once were, which is why this story is going to culminate in the ravaging of a massive number of bells to be melted down. Think about the alchemy in it when we start to say things like it's this much copper, this much tin. There's a planetary involvement in the old way people used to think about sciences when it was tied directly to nature. And the amount of skill just to make metal, you know, think about way back in the day when people were first discovering how to make metal. It was a big deal. And those were very skilled artisans of the time. And as we went up through, you can find examples of very old bells where it's almost mind-blowing to consider someone designed this shape, the thickness, the metals that go into it to get a very particular tune. Whereas up in the modern era, what we hear is, oh, it wasn't the right note, so we grind on it or we add material to it. But once upon a time, it was a very, very precise art form, almost mind-blowingly so. But go ahead, Jason.
Well, the whole bell-making thing seems to be another one of those old technologies, if you want to call it that, that got lost through the ages, and we're going to cover that in a few moments. But there seem to have been things that were discovered about bell-making that then somehow got lost to history.
Right, and apparently the pure kind of religious uses of bells took the ire of those in power, and we'll get to that. But years and years ago, I used to watch this show on TV that was all about Italy, and it was the artisans. And if I remember correctly, I hope I remember correctly, there was really one bell foundry left in Italy. And Italy plays a central role in the loss of bells that modern narrative wants us to accept.
Bells that are intended to be heard over a wide area can range from being a single bell that is hung in a turret or bell gable, or a musical ensemble, such as an English ring of bells, a carillon, or a Russian zvon, which would be tuned to a common scale and installed in a bell tower. Many public buildings might house bells, most commonly as clock bells, to sound the times of the day. Historically, bells are often associated with religious rites and are still used to call communities together for religious services. Bells would later be used to commemorate important events or people, and have been associated with the concepts of peace and freedom. There is a scientific and musical study of bells known as campanology.
And that's a heck of a thing for anyone who wants to do some side research. It is really quite compelling. And also consider, when I think of bells, the most common thing I associate with the classic bell we think of is churches, church bells. So there was clearly a spiritual significance. And you find that in the East with the mind sciences, in the old Eastern religions where they're using singing bowls. Again, they have taken certain metals and cast them for a very specific frequency, which helps them tune in their mind to do meditation and other mind sciences.
Bell founding is the art of the casting and tuning of large bronze bells in a foundry for use such as in churches, clock towers, and public buildings. They might be used to signify the time or an event or as a musical carillon or chime. Large bells are made by casting bell metal in molds designed for their intended musical pitches. Further fine-tuning might then be performed using a lathe to shave metal from the bell to produce a distinctive bell tone by sounding the correct musical harmonics.
So consider back in the day when there were supposedly no machines like lathes and they were casting these bells to a very specific pitch. As a matter of fact, I once saw a coverage of bells in a movie. I don't remember the name. It was a documentary. But apparently there was a time when many of the bells would just get destroyed and recast because they weren't perfectly on pitch. And to take a design, put metals together, cast a bell and get it right to the pitch you want out of the mold, that's pretty impressive compared to lathing off material or welding material back on to get your pitch where you want it to be.
The concept of bells of some sort probably traces back to the use of ancient mankind utilizing shells or stones that would be struck to produce a particular sound. These may have been used as musical instruments and or as part of rituals, but they would not have been bells in the senses we think of them today. Some of the earliest bell-like instruments were found having come from ancient Mesopotamia. These would have been made from clay or metal and seem to have been used for religious or some sort of ceremonial purpose.
Yeah, I have a hard time accepting that a clay bell would ring very well. But as we get into this and we start to culminate in the story of the destruction of huge numbers of bells, let me use an example about the world that we live in that most people don't think of. Here's an example. Many episodes ago, I said, how is it that the mob can magically show up in the middle of a desert to do all these illegal things? They're going to gamble, which at the time was illegal. They're going to do prostitution, illegal. They're going to do drugs. They're going to do alcohol in a way that's illegal. But for some magical reason, they showed up in a desert, which is in the middle of nowhere, and it's okay. And the law enforcement just doesn't seem to know how to find them to stop this. Well, in the modern era, it's well documented now that the Italian mob reported to the Rothschilds. And this is the example that I'm going to use because the story of bells, to me, shows the rise of darkness. Bells are used predominantly in spiritual ideas. It's claimed that if we could hear the now missing ancient bells, that the tone they made was actually uplifting. Now consider metal put together and ringing in a spiritually planned tone, then destroyed and melted down to be a bullet or a bomb, where now the noise that metal is making is about death. It's a weapon now. My point here is that for a long time, there has been a controlling force in this world that has been on the rise. And the story of bells is yet another cog in the wheel of the rise of darkness. And most people call this conspiratorial, but it's not. We can go back to, what was the date I said for Waterloo, Jason, 1812 or 1815? The world changed a lot that day because the bankers took a big step up. And from that point forward, we see this creep. And I think it's important to keep this in mind as we roll out the story of bells.
According to mainstream history, the earliest archaeological evidence of bells that has been found dates back to the 3rd millennium BC. These are traced to the Yangshou culture of Neolithic China. Clapper bells that were made of pottery have been found in several archaeological sites. The pottery bells would later develop into metal bells. In West Asia, the first bells would start to appear around 1000 BC. The earliest metal bells found are dated to about 2000 BC. With the emergence of other kinds of bells during the Shang Dynasty, which existed from approximately 1600 to 1050 BC, they were being relegated to subservient functions. They were also found to be part of horse and chariot gear, as well as collar bells on dogs. By the 13th century BC, bells that could weigh over 330 pounds were begun to be cast in China. After 1000 AD, iron became the most commonly used metal for bells, as opposed to bronze. The earliest dated iron bell was manufactured in the year 1079, which was found in the Hubei province.
Well, I think it's safe to assume, Jason, that bells played an important role, not just spiritually, but in lots of ways. Like, I don't want to lose my cow, so there's a manufacturer of bells for that. Everyone's familiar with the idea of sleigh bells. Maybe that's a similar idea, being able to locate someone. But if you look at what that story that's being painted about the importance of bell in cultural society back then to what it's become now, I mean, I don't even know, Jason, but I'm willing to bet there's not too many bell foundries in the United States. And again, I'm reasonably sure, not 100%. I think there's one main bell maker in ancient Italy, which has a long history with bells.
From an article from the University of Houston, today, some 2,000-year-old bells reveal a secret. The University of Houston's College of Engineering presents this series about the machines that make our civilization run and the people whose ingenuity created them. Just after the turn of this century, this was the 20th century, by the way, archaeologists started finding curious sets of bronze bells in tombs throughout China. They range from 2,000 to 3,600 years old, and they have an odd shape. They look like truncated cones that have been slightly squashed, something like our cowbells, but they don't have clappers. They were meant to be struck. They're called zong bells. Thousands of these bells had been unearthed by the late 1970s, and their strange secret still hadn't yet come to light. The secret was actually seen and missed in 1957 when the National Music Research Institute in China played a set of these bells in concert. The players were rehearsing a piece with the unpromising title, The East is Red. The E bell was missing in one octave, but then a player found he could get that sound by striking the C bell on its side. He found that the bell played two tones, a third apart. That was taken as a coincidence. But 20 years later, Chinese musicologists examining a set of these bells discovered that every bell in the set had the same property. It had two tones, either a third or a minor third apart. Then they found that many of these bells even had marks on the side to show players where to strike the bells to get the two tones. Each bell was, in fact, meant to be two bells in one. The importance of this discovery is clearer if we realize that the Western cathedral bell was the result of 1,000 years of development. Bells are very hard to make, yet these much older zong bells are remarkably sophisticated. They have a rich tone, but they need far less bronze to get it. And then they produce two sounds for the cost of one. We have nothing like them in our vast instrumental armory today. Acousticians are now coming to understand how they work. Musicians are finding they were really quite hard to play. And yet this technology, which also took 1,000 years to perfect, completely died out during the Han period, during the rise of the Roman Caesars. It was a remarkable technology and a remarkable art, yet it completely vanished. It's easy to look right at something that's very sophisticated without seeing the sophistication. It took us 80 years to catch on to these remarkable but unassuming bells. The best inventions are like that. In the best inventions, elegance masquerades as simplicity.
Yeah, it also masquerades as something else. Think of the art form and the duration of time that must have went into the art form to get craftsmen to not just make, design, and craft a bell that hit a pitch, but two pitches. And that tells you the level, but here's the same story again, the rise of darkness. Even in this convoluted description, there's this magical use of bells and this unbelievably spot-on creation of a thing that makes two tones. And what stopped it? It was the rise of the Roman Caesars. And there is the shadow of darkness coming into our world. Recently, there have been claims, to get a little off point, that the movie John Wick was hitting it spot on when they had their highest guy in the world above the high table was an Arab in the middle of the desert. Well, recently, there are people who are documenting that the names that we're so familiar with that started the fall, the dark fall of the world that is culminating now, we're in the Vatican. Names like Farnese, they're now claiming that those are Middle Eastern names that come from a place that would be modern Iraq. So even in the modern telling of some violent movie like John Wick, they seem to know where the head of this problem we've got in the world is. And here again, in the story of bells, they point the finger. Well, what happened to this amazing art form that's almost unbelievable in its precision? Well, the Roman Caesars. That's the reason for the end.
From an article on archaeologymag.com, a total of 24 well-preserved Chinese bingzong, also known as chime bells, have recently been discovered in the ruins of an ancient city near Zhengzhou, the capital city of Henan province in central China. The bianzong dates back over 2,000 years to the spring and autumn period, 770 BC to 476 BC. This significant archaeological find was located in a sacrificial pit near the remains of a palace. Bianzong are ancient Chinese musical instruments consisting of a set of bronze bells that produce melodious sounds when struck with a mallet. What makes these chime bells unique is their lens-shaped section, distinctive cutaway profile on the bell mouth, and 36 studs or bosses symmetrically placed around the body, allowing them to produce two different musical tones depending on where they are struck. This characteristic has earned them the nickname One Bell, Two Sounds.
And one has to imagine what the frequency actually is. I noticed in the description that you gave, Jason, there's saying like E or C, and we think of it in the frequencies and notes we play. And yet we know darn well that the way that music is delivered to us was intentionally perverted in the 30s. When the way music is delivered, the frequency was changed by only 8 cycles a second. But it's pretty clear at this point that it was meant to do what it does, and it's not meant to spiritually uplift you. It's meant to go the opposite direction and be excitable and do these things. So is it true that if we took these bells and measured them, that we would find a much more spiritual, or maybe I should just say a frequency much more tied to nature than the kind of synthetic sounds that we are subject to now?
Well, we got to think about the fact that they were able to make sets of bells, not just able to produce two sounds each, which is incredible in and of itself, but that they could replicate multiple bells so that they could be played together and be in tune with each other. That's quite impressive.
It's incredible. And then to mark where they're to be struck and to have no hint of, oh, well, we shaved material off here, or we welded, or, you know, put a bolt on it here to get the tune where we wanted it. Nope, they were breaking the mold. And this incredible achievement, this high art form clearly tied to the truth of nature, was a big deal back then and apparently missing in our world now.
Continuing on with the article, the discovery holds immense cultural and historical significance. The Bianzhong symbolize rank and power and represent a high achievement in both the art and culture of ancient China, stated Guan Ping, a historian based in Beijing. These chime bells played an integral role in the ritual system of the Kingdom Palace during the spring and autumn period and offer valuable insights into the cultural development of the era. Yu Ji, a staff member at the Henan Provincial Institute of Cultural Relics and Archaeology, provided details about the excavation. The Bianzhong sacrificial pit measures 0.8 meters in depth, 2.6 meters in length from east to west, and 1.4 meters in width from north to south. Within this pit, archaeologists discovered 3 rows of bell frames, housing a total of 24 well-preserved chime bells. The wooden frame within the pit is still clearly visible and has been dated back to the middle and late spring and autumn period.
So to me, what this represents is a time when the, we'll just call it science or the art form, let's call it the art form, was tied to nature. And when we look back on that now, it's almost magical. How did they pull this off? And to me, this is the dividing line. What we do now is synthetic. It's based on synthetic measures that we just assigned. It's detached from nature. There is no spiritual connection between most of the things we do that might be described as a science or an art form. To me, what we're looking at is a time when the art forms and the sciences of the time were tied to and tapping into the truths that only nature can provide.
The Zhou dynasty from 1046 BC to 256 BC is renowned for establishing rules for rites and music, and Bianzhong played a significant role in ceremonies, galas, and performances during this period. Music held deep connections to rituals in ancient China, playing a vital role in maintaining social order. While Bianzhong have been discovered in various regions of China in recent decades, this particular find is notable due to the exceptional preservation of both the chime bells and their wooden frame. The site also yielded 2 tombs, shaped like vertical pits, containing complete bronze ritual vessels. These tombs are believed to have belonged to high-ranking individuals, marking the first time such tombs have been found in this ancient city. The discovery of Bianzhong in this ancient city echoes previous notable finds, such as the 1978 discovery of Bianzhong inside the tomb of the aristocrat Yi of Zheng in Suzhou, Hubei province. The set found in Yi's tomb contains a total of 3,755 characters and is adorned with gold. The ancient city ruins, where this significant find occurred, span an area of 16 square kilometers and were designated as a National Archaeological Ruins Park in 2017. These ruins have provided valuable materials for research into areas such as burial systems and defense systems, further enriching our understanding of ancient Chinese history.
You know, there is a tomb that most people, it's like a mountain that most people have heard of in China, and it's claimed there's going to be the whole sky clock is mapped out on the ceiling, and there's like these rivers and oceans or lakes of mercury, and all these claims were made. But here's the thing. They state they're not going to open it because they don't have the technology. There's been other reasons. What I suspect is true is they don't want the world to see the level of what was possible. This goes on in Egypt, where another narrative has been put forward. And this is part and parcel for the controlling class. To control the world, you've got to control the population. And in recent, actually centuries, that's what war has primarily been about. You can talk to any of the generals that were famous, and they end up saying things like, I fought for the wrong side, and every time I turned my head, I was working for a corporation. Things like this. And consider the number of people that are lost in this constant state of war. So there's one control mechanism. Another one is preventing human beings from comprehending how high and in tune with nature we once were, and how good things could be, and how there really is no need to pay for all the things we need, that nature will provide that. And what we're getting into here is part and parcel of that, because bells have almost been entirely removed from our world when compared to the prominent role they played, not only in China, not only in Europe, but almost anywhere where there was advanced culture.
From the Neuroscience of Music website, a unitary ensemble of 65 bells with 130 discrete strike tones was excavated in a fully preserved state in 1978 in the Chinese province of Hubei from the tomb of the Marquis Yi of Zheng from 433 BC. The ensemble's tuning system could now, for the first time, be determined by applying exclusively empirical methods. Only pitch data, hanging order, and tone names on the bells were considered. The results show a norm tone of F4, approximately 345 hertz, a six-tone standard scale of DEF, GAC, with F-sharp, G-sharp, A-sharp, B, C-sharp, and D-sharp as accidentals, and a third-oriented tuning with equally tempered fifths, approximately 696 cent, in the series CGDAE.
Isn't it funny how they open this up where they say only pitch data, hanging order, and tone names were allowed to be considered? This is a control mechanism. How does that make logical sense? We have this amazing thing, so let's limit how we think about it. And this is what goes on in our world. For the simple fact that there is a world takeover going now, and we are at the apex of that. As we live and breathe right now, there is a world takeover going on. And we saw, if you want to be honest about it, a miniature version when Mao did what he did in China, how many millions they claimed starved to death, the destruction of so many art forms and all these other things. It's almost like what Mao did in China is what they're gearing up to try to do to the whole world. And as we pull this back around to bells, how can it be that such a prominent thing in our world, which was such a high art form, and the know-how and the mastery that was required to even make these things, is now damn near vacant, damn near missing in our world?
Two-tone bells were common in China between 1200 and 200 BC. After that, the advanced know-how to cast them was lost, and it could not yet be fully recovered in our days. The bells have an eye-shaped cross-section and vibrate in one of two modes, depending on where they are struck. A strike in the middle of the front makes front side and back side vibrate as whole units and produces the lower tone sui. A strike between the middle of the front and a side edge makes front side and back side vibrate as two units each and produces the higher tone goo. If struck correctly, both tones are fully independent, each with its own fundamental and harmonics. This is shown in a spectral analysis presented together with the underlying sound samples of the two tones of one of the original bells. Quality and timbre of the two tones are fully compatible, and they are both marked by tone name inscriptions on the bells. Thus, both were intended to be used in musical practice. Of the 33 bells in the melody section of the Zhang Ensemble, 21 have a sui gu interval of a minor third, 10 have one of a major third, and 2 have apparently mistuned ones with 244 and 342 cent.
Yeah, there was this magical high art that we lost how to do it, and we can't quite figure it out. But unfortunately, there are two that are out of tune. They're mistuned. No, not buying. They were serving a purpose that is clearly not understood. And by the way, in music, there is the idea of dissonance, just to put it out there. But how can it be that they're going to make a claim with all our modern computers and know-how and how advanced we are that this gets lost BC and we can't cover it back? Well, to me, that's not hard to accept. You want to know why? Because we use synthetic ideas that have been used and slowly implemented to control society. That's been the whole game, from education, from the languages we speak, to the math we use, to everything has been slowly implemented as mechanisms of control for the world takeover that is apexing right now. The reason we can't figure it out is because back then, their truth was in nature. What was possible was derived from nature. So we don't even have the keys to get back to it, probably. But this little end part where they're going to describe how amazing it is and then make the claim that, oh, unfortunately, a couple of them were mistuned. Well, not buying. This was a high art form. And to my mind and to my ears and eyes, there must have clearly been a reason for the tuning that they are calling mistuned. And again, dissonance comes to mind, which shows up in orchestration all the time.
It almost makes it seem like there was some sort of alchemical process being used to make these things for the final product.
Flat out. And back then, it would have been the metals were corresponding with the sky clock. It would have been the four elemental requirements, earth, air, fire. You know, everyone's aware of it. And the ether, that would have been, or some semblance of however the Eastern world viewed those ideas. But that was the bridge to what was possible, provided by nature, and what was shown to be possible and shown to be true after the fact by nature. And that is not what we do now. That is made fun of. Even though alchemy provides the shoulders that chemistry stands on, chemistry constantly badmouths it. These are control mechanisms. The things that are said to you about ether these days, like in the biggest movie in the world, the Marvel thing, what did they tell you about ether? Oh, it's dark matter and it's horrible stuff. It'll get in you and it's dangerous and destructive. That's the mindset they want to put forward about the magical so-called fifth element.
From china.org.cn. With the introduction of Buddhism into China after the Qin Dynasty, ancient bells gradually became important musical instruments for Buddhism. As the saying goes, there are bells at every temple. Without bells, there would be no temples. Round bells took the place of those shaped like combined pairs of tiles. The strokes of bells became sweet and sonorous, spreading to distant places. With their imposing shapes and deep and prolonged sound, round bells were widely used in Buddhism and Taoism. They also entered the imperial court and became a symbol of imperial power. During the Ming and Qing dynasties, ancient Chinese bells were divided into musical bells, Buddhist bells, Taoist bells, imperial court bells, and bells for sounding the night watches. Their functions and uses were broadened. According to a historical record, bells are the leading musical instruments made of metal. The peals of big ones can be heard 5 kilometers away, and the strokes of small ones can reach places 0.5 kilometer off. When a monarch, held court, or an official leaves his office, a bell is struck to call together their subordinates. A bell is struck at a feast to accompany the singing of songs. A bell is struck at a Buddhist or Taoist temple to draw the devotion of worshippers and the awe of ghosts and gods. In those days, bells served as musical instruments, sacrificial vessels, and musical instruments used in Buddhist or Taoist masses, keeping up all the uses of bells during the pre-Qin period and the Sui, Tang, Song, and Yuan dynasties.
So why are bells and foundries missing now? Well, this is why. In the opening statements Jason made, this is why we stand where we stand in regard to bells now. And I quote, "There are bells at every temple. Without bells, there would be no temples." There's not many real churches left in our world. And I know this to be true because when Covidius Minimus hit, they all broke their vow, their obligation, their spiritual prerequisite for being, and they shut their doors. Temples, synagogues, churches en masse did this. But to come back around to the point, there are bells at every temple. Without bells, there would be no temples. And this idea well encapsulates why bells have been destroyed and why bells are almost missing from our world. I guess I could make the statement missing from our world if I compared it to the level at which they once were important to culture and spiritual concerns.
Well, we're about to leave the ancient China era, but it seems that whatever tones were being produced by these things, they must have had a significance for them to go through so much effort and for them to even be preserved, to be found in an archaeological dig.
That's a fact. And when we go back to the statement you just read earlier, well, they have these amazing preserved bells, even the wooden frame that held them. Well, how are we going to study them? Well, we're going to limit it to this, this, and this. Yeah, you're spot on. It was a big deal. And the truths of what nature will allow and provide were incorporated into this high art form. And when those bells rang in a church or a temple, or wherever the spiritual goings on were happening, it aided, it facilitated in the same way that the cathedrals, now decommissioned, did. Darkness has been on the rise, and darkness is making its final run right now for this era. Maybe it happens in every era, but I'm getting to a point where I am absolutely convinced that all these black plagues and wars and things that we know the banksters and the people at the top not only started but funded were simply a means to move chess pieces on the board and to reduce populations. What do you hear about the Black Plague? Well, a third of the world went missing, right? This has been going on for quite some time. And when I look at our history with my eyes, it seems like Rome is probably the only genesis point we'll ever be familiar with. But when you come up into the modern era, you know damn well the Vatican is epicenter. And what is the Vatican? It's an extension of Rome. Whatever the case may be, what the bells once represented in our world tied us to nature, and they spiritually elevated us. And the people who are making their run now, at some point, decided that's got to go.
Rome did not fall. It became the Vatican. This is something that really must be understood well.
Well, the doors to the Senate in what we call ancient Rome went on St. John's Basilica, the first big Roman Catholic building. Yeah, one to one. One became the other, and the history books help cover how it happened, but that is part and parcel of everything in our world. Our education system has been sorely taken over. Our medical system, it's not even a medical system. Let's be honest. What is it? What is it? It's the pushing of drugs primarily. Certainly, if you need surgery, well, you might be able to make the claim this is the best, highest achievement of surgery that we've ever known. But unfortunately, that surgery is probably going to come with an inoculation and some petrochemical drugs on the backside. And unfortunately, the person needing the surgery was probably already on 5 or 6 petrochemical drugs before they ever needed the surgery. My point being is that what we now accept and call a medical system is no different than the spiritual condition of this world. It is a far cry from what it once was. And again, the people making the run destroyed the medical system starting roughly 1925 to 30. what we call the Rockefellerization. They destroyed music, or tried to make a run at starting to destroy music, in the 30s by changing the delivery pitch in an unhelpful way. They launched rock and roll, which was the dumbification, to make up a word that doesn't exist because it's dumb, of music. The level of musician prior to the onset of rock and roll, we've forgotten. People all over this country made a living, and they were talented and well-educated musicians, and rock and roll came along. And from there, it's gotten worse. It's gone downhill, downhill, to some of the music today is not even music. There's no harmony and melody. How can we call it music? It's not music. And what are they singing about? They're singing about bitches and hoes and materialistic concerns. This is the intentional dumbification, to make the pun. And when we pull it back around to bells, it's just another spoke on the same wheel. It's just that the spoke we're talking about has directly to do with spiritual concerns and the uplifting of the human condition.
As of the recording of this show, a lot has been coming to light about what rap music and that whole genre was actually for.
Well, it mirrors what's going on in the world. They're trying to play gender games. And the only reason they care is for the same reason, one of the reasons they make war, to reduce populations. What can we implement here to ensure there's fewer babies in the world? But this whole arrested the mogul guy thing is just a reflection of what the so-called woke society is pushing in general. It's just a mirror of itself, and it's corruption. It's corruption at the highest levels that it can't go on for much longer. But the push to get the body count, this has happened. We're not quite sure to what degree. But to pull it back around to the topic at hand, bells were a big deal. They were tied to spiritual concerns, probably primarily, and the know-how and art and craftsmanship that it took to operate at that level was tied to nature. And you can't do better than that. Not here, anyhow. And look around. How many bell foundries do you see? How many church bells do you hear ringing? The Eastern organizations that use them in their mind sciences. I just read an article this morning that told me bells represent both Christ and the devil, because when church uses them, that's for Christ. But when a meditative art that uses the mind sciences use them, that's clearly the devil. This is the modern takeover of the human mind as one of the faculties required to try to achieve the takeover that's culminating right now.
Moving to the time of ancient Egypt around 1500 BC, bells were made of bronze or copper, and were mostly used for ritualistic purposes. Smaller bells were used as amulets and charms, and were worn to ward off evil spirits. They might also be placed in homes. Bells were sometimes used in religious ceremonies, with the possible use of invoking or appeasing a particular deity. They might also have been used to signal the start or ending of a ceremony. The sound of the bells being struck were thought to have some sort of magical or spiritual property. There is also some evidence that bells were used as musical instruments, possibly used as rhythm instruments. Bells were also used on the collars of livestock to help keep track of the animals, especially in the dark or with larger herds. Bells, or at least bell-like objects, have been discovered in tombs. They may have been placed there as offerings, protection for the deceased soul in the afterlife, or even to signal the presence of spiritual beings.
Yeah, the only problem with mainstream describing us something about the ancient world is it's all poppycock, and it's all been co-opted, and we hear the same things over and over. But if we dig in, we can see, well, wait a minute, ward off evil spirits? So you're telling us that the bells had a positive effect, that natural frequency, that truth from nature was beneficial, benevolent? Is that what we're to learn here? But then in the same sentence or a sentence before, they're going to say, oh, they were made out of bronze and copper. And by the way, you know, all those stones that got carved, they used bronze and copper to do that. So there is the problem with accepting anything from the mainstream. But again, we're human beings. We have sophisticated minds, and we can apply logic and reason, and maybe more importantly, intuition to get down to the gist of it. And the gist of this is warding off evil spirits is a very good description of the positive nature of the tone of bells back in the day.
And for the last point for hour one, it seems also around this time, bells were being developed and used in India. While there isn't a lot of archaeological evidence, the Vedic texts mention a variety of musical instruments. Bell-like objects are certainly implied to have been in use as both musical instruments and for use in religious ceremonies. Over the centuries, they would start to be used in Hindu temples. They were known as ganta or ganti and would become integral to Hindu architecture and rituals. They would be hung at temple entrances or near what is called the sanctum sanctorum or the Holy of Holies. Ringing of the bells was thought to announce one's presence to a deity, clear the mind for worship, and ward off evil spirits. While less evidence has been found, they are still thought to have had their place in Buddhist and Jain temples for very similar reasons.
Yeah. We like to know that they're there. Don't bother with your made-up reasons, but clear the mind for worship? Yeah. Can't have that during a world takeover. Ward off evil spirits? Well, you definitely can't have that during a world takeover. But since we're going to wrap up hour one in India, let's do a simple thing. And I've forgotten the name of it, but there is a temple. I think it's called the Music Temple in India, where there are these stone pillars that you hit and they ring like a bell. But here's the thing. Two of them can look identical and you can't tell what the difference might be, but they ring at a very different pitch. There's a chain made out of stone. And that's amazing, but that's not the amazing part. The top rung is one, or top ring is one kind of stone, the top link, and the ones below it are another type of stone. The level at which nature provided for us when we were in tune seems magical and impossible to us today, but the evidence is indisputable. It is there in front of our faces. To me, considering bells ties into exactly this for the simple reason of the tradition, know-how, and craftsmanship that had to have been developed over centuries, maybe longer, to get to the level they once were, are tied to nature. What vibrations in nature are benefit? What will allow me to ward off evil spirits? What will allow me or assist me in clearing my mind so I can worship and become closer to divinity? These ideas are why bells are damn near absent from our world, and they are the foundational reason why the collection and destruction of bells happened, which they want you to imagine only happened because of Nazis and World War II, which it's been going on longer than that. But Jason, I'm going to wrap up hour one. You want to get anything more in?
Well, obviously, when we get back, we're going to continue with the historical timeline. But as we get into the 20th century, we are really going to see just how much of a crime against humanity and history was committed during the two world wars. It's just absolutely tragic.
Darkness is making its run on our world. Maybe it happens at every age change. Probably it does. I mean, logically, it seems reasonable, right? Maybe this time around, darkness had a better foothold because they got control of all the banking and money. And at this point, is there a corporation BlackRock doesn't own? I just heard they're selling Motel 6. They own everything, which means they control everything. But they are darkness. And what do we know about darkness? Well, it's the same reason the bells got to go. Because if I go into pitch black darkness and I light a light, all darkness flees to the furthest recesses with one light. What's going on in our world now is the diminishing of light and the lights represented by the human beings, which are now gone or damaged, which is the reason for the rise in things like dementia, to dim the lights. This isn't over, and it remains to be seen what happens. But it is my point of view that there is no more important thing one could be involved in right now than to comprehend what is true, right, and correct as proven by nature, and then try to live that way as best you can, and to never forget the golden rule. Because these things fly in the face of the darkness that is making its run on us right now. Hour One is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode, and members get access to comments, threads, forums. They can create all those things, and they can stream the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon anytime they please. That contains all my older, mostly lunar-based telescope work to include lunar waves and the initial discovery of the so-called second sun. Members also get exclusive access to my current solar work, and me and my partner that I do this with, he has acquired an even larger solar telescope and more tools that will allow us to do things. In short, members get exclusive access to that. I hope to see you all logged in as a member. That'll be hour one of episode 595, and I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.